This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and happy holidays to you. Today, the winter solstice, in fact. Tonight at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, 10 o'clock Pacific Time, will be the great holiday. The winter solstice will be happening. So, should be a fine time for folks who celebrate that. We're going to have Greg Palast on the program a little later on. He's just back from Ecuador, going to be telling us about some shady goings-on down there in the jungle with the oil companies versus the indigenous people. But first, our first hour of the program, as it always is on Friday, has been for 5 years or more, Senator Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders, the independent from the state of Vermont, was the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, an independent now in the United States Senate. His website's sanders.senate.gov. And Bernie, welcome and happy holidays to you.
Good to be with you, and happy holidays to all of the listeners.
Thank you, Bernie. Bernie, on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal, there was an article about Senator Tom Coburn, calling him Dr. No, because he's put holds on over 90 bills. Not to make this so much about Tom Coburn himself specifically. In fact, the headline is called One Man Gridlock, Meet Tom Coburn, Senate's Dr. No. Oklahoma conservative specializes in the hold stopping 90 bills in 2007. But, unless you want to talk about him, but this is really, there's a larger issue, isn't it,
about how
the Senate is run?
That's exactly the rules, right. That is exactly right. And what people, I think, don't fully understand, and to be honest with you, until I got here in the Senate, I didn't fully understand, is the rules, to say the least, are very, very strange. And it's not just Democrats versus Republicans or independents. It's not just the fact that the Republicans have used the filibuster more times in 1 year, Tom, 62 times, than has ever been used in a two-year term. They've broken the all-time world's record.
Right.
It's not just that you need 60 votes to pass something. It's that any one member under certain circumstances can stop the Senate from moving forward, and therefore has a great deal of power to forge a compromise. I have used this tactic a little bit myself. Just give you an example. Last week, Coburn wanted to put a hold on a number of amendments, including some really, really good legislation that would help low-income people and kids. And what he was essentially planning to do at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, which is very late for the Senate when everybody wants to get out of here, his position was, well, I'm going to keep a hold on it. I'm going to keep talking unless you take out those amendments. And, in fact, the Democrats and Republicans said, I went down to the floor and said, well, guess what? I am going to object unless you put those amendments back in. And, in fact, they did that.
So it works both ways.
It works both ways. It certainly can. And, in fact, we'll be looking in the next month about how we use the Senate rules in order to advance the needs of the middle class and working families of this country in a progressive agenda. But bottom line is it is an absurd situation where any one person, it's not just Coburn, any one person can throw a monkey wrench in the process.
Yeah. Interesting. So what's happening in the Senate right now?
Well,
the
Senate ended at, I think it was midnight or 11 o'clock on Tuesday night. And I would say it is a mixed bag. Clearly, compared to where we were a year ago, when the Republicans accomplished absolutely nothing except giving tax breaks to billionaires and expanding the war in Iraq, I would say this session was a lot better. The minimum wage was finally raised after, I think it was 9 years, to 7 1/4 an hour. We passed, in fact, a very strong higher education bill, which will expand Pell Grants, lower interest rates, for college students, and also provide a debt forgiveness program for those people who serve in the public sector. There was a very large increase in funding for the Veterans Administration to take care of veterans who are coming home from Iraq, and also some of the older veterans. And Bush and his friends, despite all of their great love of the soldiers, so to speak, had underfunded the VA for many, many years. We clearly have not gone as far as I would like to see us going in transforming our energy system. But the energy bill that was passed will increase the CAFE standards, put more emphasis on biofuels. I had some provisions in there which will create an environmental and energy block grant by which over a period of years, I suspect billions of dollars, will come into cities and towns in order to improve energy efficiency and move toward wind and solar and create a lot of good jobs in the process. So there were some steps forward, but given the needs of America right now, where we are, with a never-ending war in Iraq, with a growing gap between the rich and the poor and the shrinking of the middle class, with a state of desperation, you know, I have four very, very good caseworkers in Burlington. And their job is when people call up and say, you know, I'm having problems with Social Security or Medicaid or whatever it may be, help us. These guys do a really good job. And there are caseworkers in every center.
To advocate for your constituents.
Right. In other words, if people are having a problem with the system, that's their job, is to help out. What they are now seeing is a level of desperation that they have not seen for a very, very long time. What we're seeing in Vermont and we're seeing all over this country is that people are having a very difficult time paying for their home heating fuels because those fuels are soaring they're soaring and people just don't have the money to pay for it. Looks like it's going to be a cold winter. We're looking at food banks in Vermont and all over the country. They're running out of food. So you're seeing people are having a hard, very hard time in many parts of the country dealing with housing, with gas at, you know, $3.10 a gallon. It's hard in rural areas for people to get to work and pay that cost. People are losing their health insurance. The cost of health care is soaring. And in the middle of all this, to show you just how out of touch this White House is, the president... The headline in the Washington Post is, Bush is upbeat about economy's prospects. Bush's advisor said, we just don't see any reason why the economy won't continue to expand. And meanwhile, when they talk about expansion, what they're forgetting to talk about is that the only beneficiaries of their expansion are the very wealthiest people in this country, who are getting much, much wealthier, and almost all of the new income growth is going to the people on the top, while the people on the bottom in many cases are working longer hours for lower wages. So the bottom line is I think this Congress has made some progress, certainly nowhere near enough as to what we have to do to move this country in a very different direction. And I think we have got to continue the grassroots activism to make fundamental changes in the way business is done in Washington.
Yeah. I noticed that in the Financial Times today, USB, I believe it's a Swiss-based bank, is selling off 9% of their bank to, they just discovered, a Saudi prince in order to bail them out as part of this disastrous thing. Paul Krugman today talking about how in 2003 this all came about because of a deregulation that happened at the federal level, deregulating the mortgage industry. And, in fact, you know, one guy showed up, one of the members of the administration, with a chainsaw to say, you know, we're going to cut through the regulations. And now people at USB are pushing back, some of the major stockholders saying, wait a minute, we don't want a foreign government owning our bank. Yet they've already bought a good chunk of Citibank. I mean, America's being sold off. We've got this disaster as a consequence of these conservative economic policies.
You know, Tom, it will take years and years and years for us to recover from what this administration has done, and certainly deregulation, privatization. The result is, I mean, we almost take it in step now. We're not shocked or surprised. But a couple of weeks ago, or a week ago in Bali, the United States representative was booed. You read that.
Yeah.
Booed in the international community. And that is how we are looked upon in the rest of the world. The dollar is declining. More and more of the assets of the United States are being bought up by foreign interests. Our people are working for horrendously low wages in many cases. The minimum wage today in real dollars is lower than it was 30 years ago. And what we're looking at is a situation where the people on top making out like bandits. Let me give you one example. This is from a Wall Street Journal article a couple of months ago. The wealthiest 1% of Americans in 2005 earned 21.2% of all income. The bottom 50% earned 12.8%.
Wow.
Got that?
Yeah.
That's where we're going. And that's why we need strong grassroots activism, a progressive agenda, and we need to change the direction of this country in a very fundamental way.
And it's not enough to just vote.
It's not enough to vote. No, we need to be people active 24 hours a day.
There you go. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. He'll be taking your calls, 866-303-2270, our chat room at TomHartmann.com, and blog over at AirAmerica.com, 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartmann Program, where smart people get their news.
On the fifth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me a stop to the START treaty so we could be legal, building Star Wars 2 to defend our lack of a democracy. On the sixth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me stock market tips to replace Social Security. On the seventh day of Bushmas, my president gave to me faith-based initiatives to replace Social Security. On the eighth day of Bushmas, my president gave to me drills for the Arctic, water laced with arsenic, oil won't mix with water, but oil and government order in a centrifuge, which we'll set up in a wildlife refuge.
And on it goes. Welcome back. The Tom Hartmann Program, by the way, brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. Our program, I like to think of as listener-supported radio, supported by you, our listeners, listening in particular for our local sponsors as well as our national sponsors, and patronizing them and letting them know that you're listening and letting your radio stations know that you're listening if you like the program. By the way, just a heads up, Monday and Tuesday we will be playing best of programs of the show, so this will be our last program before Christmas. We'll be back on Wednesday with a live show. Senator Bernie Sanders on the air with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. And Bernie, anything else you wanted to add before we get to pick up some phone
calls? I did want to add one thing. When we look, Tom, about changing national priorities, it's absolutely imperative that we look at military spending. That's above and beyond the $12 billion a month we're spending in Iraq. The military budget has been exploding in recent years. If my memory is right, it's somewhere around $500 billion. This is above and beyond Iraq. And what we are finding, and I think CBS is going to do a little piece on this tonight on their news, is that, just to give you one example, In the Air Force obviously buys a lot of spare parts for their equipment. And what the GAO found is that over $18 billion of Air Force spare parts inventory were not needed to support their needs. $18 billion.
Wow.
Just in the Air Force. So I think over the next several months we've got to start taking a hard look at the military budget, because if you're interested in providing health care to our people, educational opportunity, you're going to get the money from someplace. And one of the areas, I think, is the waste that exists within the military.
Yeah, that's where your real welfare comes.
That's where it's going. That's right.
Yep. Okay, Chris in Carson, California, listening on K-Talk. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning. And good morning, Senator Sanders. Tom, I just want to ask you if you have a teacher's credential, because you're educating America.
No, I don't.
I certainly appreciate what you do. I've stood up in front of I'm a longshoreman, or actually a clerk now, and I've stood up in front of my dispatch when I was at Local 13 in Wilmington, California, and held up a sign to listen to Air America because there was something on about Constitution. This was more than a year ago. That's the kind of activist I am.
Thank you.
And as a matter of fact, Tom, I just heard on the news this morning that the White Rose Society is going to be following the Rose Parade in Pasadena, California, with impeach Bush and Cheney march at the end of the Rose Parade. So this will be 1 year. I'll definitely watch the Rose Parade. Senator Sanders, I just want to say, you know, happy holidays to you. And I watched you on Free Speech TV, the National Conference for Media.
Yep.
And I just wondered if you'd recap what the media will not tell you about Martin Luther King.
Good.
And the last statement, what have corporations that borrow the people's airwaves given us in return for the loan? Thank you, sir.
Okay,
thank
Chris,
you,
thank you for your work, and that's exactly what we need is we need grassroots activism all over this country, and we appreciate what Chris is doing. I spoke not long after I was elected in the early winter in Memphis, Tennessee, to activists who are concerned about media and media consolidation. And one of the points that I made, just using a million examples, is, you know, Tom, Martin Luther King Jr., to my mind, was certainly one of the great heroes of the 20th century. If you turn on the news when his birthday comes around, what they will always play, or almost always play, and appropriately so, is the work that he did in breaking down segregation barriers in the South. And God only knows that was a huge, huge step forward for America, and he deserves, and his colleagues, all the credit in the world. But what the media very often does not talk about is the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. was a forthright spokesperson in opposition to the Vietnam War. And the media doesn't talk about the fact that at the time of his death, he was organizing a poor people's march, not just of blacks, but of whites, of Native Americans, of Hispanics, bringing people together to demand a fundamental change in national priorities in this country. He was doing that against Lyndon Johnson. And of course, when he was killed in Memphis, Tennessee, he was there defending the rights of striking garbage workers. So the point about it is what they have sanitized Martin Luther King Jr. about, and they said, well, yeah, he was very good in fighting for the African-American and for civil rights, and that's great. But they have, in doing that, they have taken away a good part of what this man was about, which is fighting for a just and peaceful world and for justice for all workers.
Yeah, very, very well said, Bernie. We're going to take a break here in just a couple of seconds, and we'll be back. Senator Bernie Sanders is with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman radio program. Our number, 866-303-2270, if you'd like to call in. If you'd like to drop into our live chat room, go to tomhartman.com and just click live chat. You can drop in and participate with us there. Also, there's a blog there and a message board there, as well as over at airamerica.com if you're on the Tom Hartman page. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
You better watch out. I'm telling you why. The FAA doubts that Santa will fly. Santa Claus is coming by ground.
Uh-oh.
His bags were too weird. They're posting his bum. They're checking his beard. He's getting the wand. Santa isn't leaving the ground. He'd take a flight if he could. They thought his suit was weird. They profiled him as bad, not good, just because of his long beard.
So Santa's been profiled. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders on the line with us, taking your calls, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and John in Los Angeles, California. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator. Good morning, Tom. Best wishes this holiday season, and happy holidays.
Thank you.
I want to, this thing that happened this week with Kevin Martin of the FCC, I understood that our tax dollars basically keep the FCC in business, and we pay their paychecks. And where does he get off or get the power to ease restrictions on merges of corporations and worry about the financial stability of a newspaper? I think the FCC needs to be defederalized and our tax dollars taken away because they are not working in our interest.
Well, John, there is, I suspect, no agency of the federal government under George Bush that is working in the interest of ordinary Americans. So almost without exception, they work for the wealthy and the powerful. You just read in the papers today about how the EPA now wants to not allow California and Vermont and other states to enforce anti-pollution standards and emission standards from cars. This is an environmental agency working against the environment. In terms of the FCC, it should surprise nobody. There is a 3-2 Republican majority. and their job is to represent large corporate interests. And what the corporate interests are interested in is deregulating the media. The issue at hand right now is to do away with laws so that you will have, you could have, in certain geographical areas, one company, one individual owning the television station, the newspaper, the only newspaper in town, perhaps, radio station as well. And they think that that is a great idea. Needless to say, a number of us in the Senate do not. So I would say to John, there, you are dealing with the most reactionary, anti-middle class, anti-working people administration in the modern history of America. Nothing should shock you. And clearly the Congress has got to do everything that it can, to stymie their power until he is out of office.
Bernie, speaking of the EPA thing, just very quickly here, the New York Times is reporting, their electronic edition just came out, that before the EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson answered the pleas of industry executives by announcing his decision to deny California the right to regulate greenhouse gases from vehicles, auto executives directly appealed to Vice President Cheney. EPA staffers told the LA Times that Johnson made his decision only after Cheney met with the executives. On multiple occasions in October and November, Cheney met with industry executives, including the CEOs of Ford Motor and Chrysler, and it goes on.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, you know, let's...
Surprise, I mean, surprise.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to be surprised about. When you look at their decisions, 99% of the time, occasionally, you'll be surprised. They are there. Just when you want to get a handle on what they will be doing, say, all right, what do the wealthiest people in America want? What do the largest corporations in America want? And that's what they will do. They have turned their back on the middle class. I mean, I just read from the front page of the Wall Street Washington Post, Bush thinks this economy is doing just fine, while the middle class is shrinking and poverty is increasing and a level of desperation among poor people that we have never seen before. So nothing really surprises me, and we just have got to be as aggressive as we can to try to stop them where we can.
Yeah. Oh, amen. We got a whole pile of callers here. Let's get back to them. Steve in Colorado, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Morning, Tom. Morning, Senator Sanders. I wanted to touch briefly on campaign finance reform, in particular, you know, public financing of campaigns and term limits. And short of an answer of, well, we need to elect more progressive Democrats, because quite frankly, it's my belief that there are maybe not an equal amount of Democrats, but at least a large portion of the Democratic Party that would be opposed to those sort of things. So what can we do, either by, you know, referendum at a state level, or I'm looking for suggestions, is what can we do to make this happen? Because nothing, all the things you've railed against here this morning, and we rail against every day, none of these things, I'm 45, and if I live to be 90, I'll be shocked if, you know, some of the things that we want to change will change. What can we do to force this type
of... Let me say a couple of things, Steve. Sometimes the world is strange, and no one can predict really what happens tomorrow. Sometimes things move very, very quickly. What I can tell you is Bush's ideology, which is a pro-war ideology rather than diplomacy, an ideology which represents the wealthy and the powerful rather than the vast majority of the people, an anti-environmental ideology... He is a fringe element in American society. And the day may come sooner than you think. And I certainly hope that you will be alive and that I'll be alive, where there may be sweeping changes in this country moving us in a very different direction. But to answer your questions, I certainly believe in public funding of elections. When we talk about why the White House and why many members of Congress, including Democrats, represent the wealthy and the powerful, clearly it is attributable to where people get their money from. I have been very lucky in my campaigns, and I needed a lot of money to run for the U.S. Senate, that we had tens and tens and tens of thousands of people in Vermont and all over this country who contributed $20, $50, $70. But most people don't get their money that way, and they become dependent upon big money interests, and that's why so little gets done. So I believe in public funding of elections. I do not believe in term limits. I think term limits in many ways is a conservative approach to government. I think if you have public funding, you can throw, and elections where challengers have an equal shot at it, you can get rid of incumbents that way. I think when you have a constant movement of members of the legislature or the Congress in and out, it's the bureaucrats and, in fact, lobbyists who will end up having more power. So I'm not for term limits, but I am very strongly for public funding. How do you move this forward? I think what we have to see is we need movements in this country which are not just anti-war movements or pro-environment movements. We need a progressive movement. There is no simple answer. Chris from California mentioned talking at the Longshoremen's Union that he's a member. People are going to have to be active in every venue in which they live, whether it's their neighborhood, whether it's on the job, whether it's at the school. And we have to have a progressive agenda, which includes, by the way, public funding of elections. It includes a national health care program. It includes doing away with tax breaks for billionaires and cutting unnecessary military spending. It includes changing our trade policy. In my view, we have to start debating the real issues, educating, and organizing. No magic solution. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I would say, Steve, don't be quite as pessimistic as you are. Sometimes things move very, very quickly.
Richard in Ohio, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, is that for me?
That's for you.
Hi, how are you? I haven't called in a long time, but I spoke once with Senator Sanders. I'm interested in why our senators, the Democratic and the independent senators, aren't doing more like Chris Dodd did to, instead of railing about how bad the Bush administration is, why don't we take some strong action as senators and do more like Chris Dodd and just rail on the Senate so we get some, you know, public interest in some news on the different radio stations and the newspapers that, yes, we are fighting as hard as we can, and show it on the Senate floor by either, you know, filibustering all the time, because doing nothing is really doing something, and that's not passing bad legislation. Also, I'd like to know why Senate Leader Reid doesn't threaten the nuclear option like they did against the Democrat minority. Thank you.
Okay, well, Richard asked some very good questions, and I think he makes a very good point. And I think, Richard, you will see the Senate majority moving a little bit closer to your position than where they have been. It is my view that if the Republicans are going to filibuster every single major piece of legislation, and if they're going to support the most right-wing extremist president that perhaps we've ever had in the history of this country, then I think the Democrats have got to take off the gloves as well. And my suggestion would be is that Reid announced that we're going into session 24-7, and that is Republicans want to filibuster, fine. We'll see them at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday night. They could say goodbye to their wives and their kids because they ain't going to see them for a while. If they want to be obstructionists, they're going to have to pay a price. And that is, they let them explain to the American people, and if it takes 3 days to do it, let them take it 3 days why they don't want to expand health insurance for children. Let them do that. Let them explain why they want to protect tax breaks for the oil companies rather than moving us to sustainable energy. Let them do that. Let them get on the floor. And we can have that debate. But I tend to agree with Richard that we have got to be more aggressive, and that's...
Do you think we're going to see more senators stand up like Chris Dodd did and kind of do it on their own?
The answer is probably yes.
Yeah, good. I hope so. Senator Bernie Sanders with us on the line. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, 866-303-2270, TomHartmann.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, AirAmerica.com for the blog over at Air America. 45 minutes past the hour. By the way, Senator Sanders' office, Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. Check it out. Great newsletter there, too. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program, the No Boring Zone. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
All the lights are coming on.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour. Hey, a special heads up. Sunday, December 23rd, at noon Eastern Time and then repeated at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on C-SPAN 2, Book TV, will be me. So if you're interested in seeing an hour of me ranting about Cracking the Code, my new book about the art and science of political communication, Check out C-SPAN 2 Book TV, December 23rd, Sunday, noon Eastern Time, and then recycle replay to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us on the line, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Jeff in Detroit, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, hi. It's great to talk to you. I have a question about, like, PAYGO and, the last Iraq war spending addition and the spending. Why is there such opposition to, like, actually applying PAYGO to this Iraq supplemental spending and David Congressman David Obey's war tax? I mean, is there, like, opposition in the Senate?
Well,
like,
that's there is, and that's a very good question. You know, we have a president who has run up record-breaking deficits, who tells us just how fiscally responsible he is now, because he is not going to fund expanding children's health care. He is not going to fund programs for the middle class, because we just can't afford those programs. But when it comes to the war budget, well, we don't have to pay for it. We're just going to pass that on to our kids and grandchildren. When it comes to repealing the alternative minimum tax and dealing with that, putting a fix on that, not repealing it, which we have got to do, otherwise a lot of middle-class families would pay, he doesn't want to pay for that as well. So he is very selective about his fiscal responsibility. But to answer your question, when it comes to war spending, there's not a problem. We can drive up the deficit by many, many billions of dollars. Just leave that bill to our kids and our grandchildren. Because, you know, no, we don't have to sacrifice for this war. Just pass it on to the kids and the grandchildren. It's a total outrage, but that is what Bush is doing, and I'm afraid we don't have the votes in the Congress to stop that.
And when he was referring to PAYGO, he meant pay-as-you-go, which is the
right
policy that the Democrats
have
advocated.
In other words, if you're going to spend $12 billion a month on the war, how about paying for that?
Right. Well, how about raising it in taxes?
Right. How about raising the taxes and making people understand the consequences of this war from a financial point of view? He chooses not to do that. Just lets our kids and grandchildren pick up that.
Which, oddly enough, is what the Republicans were demanding of Roosevelt and Truman back in the day. It's so strange.
Well, just fiscally irresponsible. People have got to know what things cost, and you just can't keep passing it on.
There you go. Roger in Rhode Island. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Is that Roger?
That's Roger.
Oh, hi. It's an honor to speak to you again. Senator and Tom, I was very encouraged. April 2007 edition of Discover magazine had an article called Black Gold in the Amazon. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's about biochar carbon sequestration, which was used by the Amazonian people and is still used in some areas for sustainable agriculture in a much bigger area, much larger population than was ever thought possible, because instead of just slashing and burning like they do now, they actually charred the wood, which...
Right. Now, this is great news, Roger. Is there a question there for Senator Sanders?
Yes, I just want to get that out, and biopact.com is kind of a clearinghouse for it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Roger, I am not aware of what's going on in the Amazon in that regard. What I can tell you is, as in the energy bill, we put a whole lot of money to encourage greater use of biofuels so we can break our dependency on Mideast oil and carbon in general.
Yeah. Frank in Denver, Colorado, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning. Season's greeting to you both.
You too.
Thank you.
As disgusted as I am with so much that seems to be awry with this administration's America, I have recently become aware of the political imprisonment of what appears to be a blatantly innocent Don Siegelman, former governor of Alabama, for approximately, I believe, 5 years now. And I'm just wondering if Washington is doing anything to end this abomination of the American justice system.
This is just starting to leak into the press.
Yeah, that's right. I know, Tom, you have focused on
yes.
on that issue. And I think there is some discussion here having to do with, as I understand it, the White House influence over a U.S. attorney in that state. So the answer is I'm not aware of a whole lot, but I believe there is some rumblings of hearings.
And if there are some hearings there, you would support them? You'd
yeah,
be interested in hearing what's going on, yeah. Mike in Portland, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello. I would just ask that Election Day be a federal holiday, and if you would support legislation for that.
Well, as a matter of fact, when I was in the House early on, I introduced legislation, I think, along with John Conyers, to do just that. I think Mike's point is a good point. We have, compared to many other industrialized countries, a low voter turnout. And I think Election Day should be Democracy Day. I think people should have the entire day to think about what they want to do and in their leisure get out and vote and not have to maybe vote before you go to work or come running back home before 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock when the polls close. So I think if the goal is to get as large a voter turnout as possible, I think we've got to do everything we can. And one of the ways that we should do that is have a voting holiday. So I agree with Mike on that.
Amen. We got about 45 seconds here. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Quick question for Bernie.
Yeah, Tom, Bernie, thank you. We require out of our government life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's now come out that without medical insurance or lacking medical insurance, it's more likely that you will suffer a long time and die. So is it possible that we would sue the American government for negligence at this point to the both of you during this holiday season? Peace.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And I think the goal here is not to sue the American government. The goal is to move us toward a national health care program, which guarantees health care to all of our people. We can provide health care to all of our people without spending any more than we're currently spending. We're the only major country on earth that doesn't have a national health care program, and let's move in that direction. And, Tom, let me just take this opportunity again to wish you and all of the listeners a very, very happy holiday season.
Thank you so much, Bernie, and the same to you and your family. And thank you so much for all these many years that you've been on our program every Friday.
My pleasure.
You're a real gem and a real patriot. We're so proud to have you with us. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Thank you, Bernie. 57 minutes past the hour.
You're in the Democracy Zone.
Democracy Zone.
With Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
And welcome back. It's Anything Goes Friday, and we'll be taking your calls on pretty much any topic you want. There's a couple things that I just wanted to briefly riff on before we get to that. The first is, today is the Friday, the last Friday before Christmas, and we will be doing recycled shows on Monday and Tuesday. So, best of, some really good shows, actually, that we have put together. But we'll be back live Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. Tuesday is Christmas, as I recall, and today is Friday. And I remember when we lived in Germany, there was one Christmas where, we only lived there one Christmas, and although I've been there for several Christmases. And the Herr Mueller, Mr. Mueller, the guy who's kind of the patriarch of this organization that we worked with, he's now in his 90s. He would go out in the forest along with a bunch of the people, you know, who worked with him and find a giant tree and light it with candles. And they had an orchestra, a little orchestra of kids there. And we would go following the music, and they would have the animals there and everything. We'd go find this lit tree, and then he'd read from the Bible. And that was kind of like our Christmas thing. It was really cool. But the story that I heard was, you know, that the Christmas tree was all about, you know, back in the day, long, long ago, in Northern Europe, and perhaps in many other parts of the world as well, but this appears to be where the Christmas tree came from, that the winter solstice, which is today, the shortest day of the year, that the winter, as the days got shorter and shorter and shorter, the people got more and more nervous. You know, hey, it's getting cold out there, and the sun is getting dim, and it's getting lower on the horizon, and what's going on? And so the high priests had figured this stuff out. You know, they had these calendar stones, you know, Stonehenge is like the biggest example. They were semi-astronomers, astrologers, and they knew when the solstice was. And so on the solstice, they'd go out and they'd find a great big tree on top of a mountain, and they'd light that thing on fire. And they'd say, I order the sun to reignite! Or they'd say, I am going to reignite the sun and light on fire this giant tree. And the next day, the day would be a little longer. And the next day after that, the day would be a little longer. The day after that, the day would be a little longer. And the people would go, he did it again. And the guy would have, you know, his power for another year. Thus, the Christmas tree. And Santa, I remember Steve Larson is an old and dear friend. I dedicated one of my books, Greatest Spiritual Secret of the Century, to Steve and Robin Steve, and I wrote the foreword to Steve's most recent book on neurofeedback, which if you go over to Amazon.com and just plug my name in, you'll find it there on the list. And Steve is a professor of psychology at SUNY, at State University of New York, and the protege of Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell, the myth genius. Joseph, I believe, married Stephen Robin. Steve was with Joseph when he died. In fact, Steve wrote the only authorized biography of Joseph Campbell, Fire in the Mind. And he was on our show a couple of years ago telling this story that one of the old Norwegian myths is, or one of the old Norwegian stories, Odin, the Norwegian god Odin, the story was that he would fly through the sky with an eight-legged horse, and this became eight reindeers, and would land on the homes of places, you know, people's homes, and the kids would put out food for the horse, and in exchange for that, as a way of thanking the children for having good hearts and for being good people, then Odin would leave gifts for them. And then there's another one that the ancient shaman, the Norwegian and Scandinavian shaman, had figured out that there was a certain, and you know, why the red and white stuff, right? That there was a certain type of mushroom, I believe it's in the Amanita family, that contains a powerful form of dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is a hallucinogen, sort of like LSD. The problem is that it will kill you, this mushroom. It's a deadly, deadly mushroom. But reindeer can eat it, and their livers metabolize the toxin. You break it down and render it harmless without changing the hallucinogen. And so the shaman would cultivate areas where these particular the mushrooms grew, and these mushrooms have red caps with little white spots all over them. And then they would encourage the reindeer to go eat them, and then they would follow the reindeer around, and wherever they found yellow snow, they would gather up the snow and make that into a magic brew and drink that stuff, and suddenly they're seeing little guys and flying reindeer and Santa in his red and then red and white and all this stuff. And so some of our interesting stories, I just thought that was kind of cool. I wanted to share with you, getting to politics. And by the way, it is a wonderful time of the year. I mean, most of the world's major religions find in the winter solstice period a time for reflection. It's kind of the you know, yin and yang. You know, we go out into the world during the summer. We go in within ourselves during the winter. And this is such a marvelous time for all of us. You know, atheists, secularists, Christians, Jews, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindu, just it's such a great time to go within and you know, connect with family and come together and just really contemplate what's gone wrong and what can go right and what we can do right and what, you know, make amends and make things work and honor and thank the people that we love and that who are parts of our family and the family of all humanity, frankly, and the family of all life on Earth, for that matter. Paul Krugman has a brilliant piece in today's New York Times where he's talking about how 10 million American families are going to end up, in all probability, with what's called negative equity, a home that they owe more on than it's worth. This is a disaster. This is an economic disaster for people. And investors are going to suffer a $400 billion loss in addition to what's already gone down. And he then gets into the history of this. A couple days ago, I was talking about this, and I was ruminating out loud. I said, I know that there was this deregulation that occurred during the Bush administration, during the last couple of years, the last 4 or 5 years, that led to this explosion of so-called subprime mortgage lending. I didn't have the details, and Paul Krugman lays them out today. And it goes back to Alan Greenspan and to this theology, this religion, that if you deregulate things, everything will be wonderful. As Paul Krugman writes in today's New York Times, he says, in a 1963 essay for Ayn Rand's newsletter, see, Alan Greenspan was initiated into her cult back in the 50s in her apartment in New York City. He dismissed as a collectivist myth, I'm quoting now from Paul Krugman, Mr. Greenspan dismissed as a collectivist myth the idea that businessmen left to their own devices, quoting Greenspan now, would attempt to sell unsafe food and drugs, fraudulent securities, and shoddy buildings. On the contrary, he declared, Quoting Greenspan again, it is in the self-interest of every businessman to have a reputation for honest dealings and a quality product, end quote. So this is the belief that all people who are doing business are going to do it ethically and morally and upright because that's the way the market works and everything's going to be wonderful and we don't need no stinking regulation. Well, it happened on June 3rd, 2003. Not so long ago. June 3rd, 2003, a press conference was held in Washington, D.C. to announce a new initiative, this quoting from Paul Krugman now in today's New York Times, aimed at reducing the regulatory burden on banks. Representatives of four of the five government agencies responsible for financial supervision used tree shears to attack a stack of paper representing bank regulations. The fifth representative, James Gillerin of the Office of Thrift Supervision, wielded a chainsaw. Also in attendance were representatives of the financial industry trade associations, which had been lobbying for the deregulation. Krugman notes there were no representatives of consumer groups there. He says 2 months after that event, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, one of the tree shears wielding agencies, moved to exempt national banks from state regulations that protect consumers against predatory handling. So now that thus what happened, a whole bunch of predators came out. In fact, the article in today's New York Times, fraud seen as driver and wave of disclosures. Is this fraud or is it speculation? They were talking about how people were filling out mortgage applications saying that they made more money than they actually did in order to qualify for loans. Well, you know, there are very credible reports of people being encouraged to do this. And the rationale was, you know, if you get this loan, the house is going to be worth more in 2 years. You can just sell the house. You'll make a profit on it. So people were speculating in real estate who really didn't have the means to do it. And now they've been caught. And now they're hurting. And so now Greenspan comes out and says, cash is available. That's taxpayer money. That's your money and my money. Tax is available. And we should use that in larger amounts as is necessary to solve the problem of the stress of this. In other words, deregulation caused this problem. Is wiping out millions of Americans, tens of millions of Americans, and bringing down a lot of big corporations and banks along with it, and may bring down the world economy. This ideology, this libertarian, conservative ideology, wiping us out. And Greenspan says, what's the solution? Well, let's tax the middle class a little harder and take that money and give it to the bankers to bail them out. Right. 16 minutes past the hour. Your call's up next.
Uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Now, this would be Dick Cheney, right? Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. The Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199. Fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege. TomHartman.com to drop into our live chat room. Air America Radio, or AirAmerica.com. There's a blog over there and information about the show. And 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Carol Ann in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Hey, Carol Ann, welcome to the program, and thanks for listening on WOIC.
Hey, you have no idea what a privilege this is to speak to you. Where we live, we only got right-wing talk radio.
Ooh.
I know, it's pretty harsh. Sean Insanity and Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I wanted to ask you, to me and to a lot of people that I know, it seems there's ample evidence of high crimes and misdemeanors on the part of this administration. Why have the Democrats taken impeachment off the table? Why won't they grow a set, if you will,
and
pursue it? Because I think the majority of people would support it, and I think there's ample evidence to convict and hopefully imprison these people.
I think Robert Wexler is moving in that direction. The problem is he only has two other people with him. I mean, you know, in the speaking out on this stuff, there's this conventional wisdom within the Democratic leadership, and it has infected the House and Senate. And these people, you know, they're good people of good conscience, and they really believe this. And frankly, it may be true right now, I don't think that it was true a year ago, you know, when the Democrats came to power. But they were afraid that as soon as they came to power, the first thing that they did was start impeaching, trying to impeach Bush, or Cheney for that matter, that the American people would go, oh, geez, you know, as soon as we give them power, what do they do? The same thing that those stupid Republicans did when they went after Clinton. We've got another one of these food fights on our hands. It's all political. It's all just a game. These guys aren't really interested in our looking out for us and protecting the American people. They're not interested in passing minimum wage laws and children's health insurance programs and better CAFE standards, you know, increasing fuel efficiency. Instead, they just want to impeach the president. And, you know, that's the calculus. That's the rationale. And I'm not enough of a prognosticator or a political genius to know if they might not be right. I mean, it's not inconceivable that they're right, that's how, when you look at the vast majority of Americans, particularly the swing voters, which are absolutely necessary to win elections, that might not have been how they would respond, and in particular how they would have responded given the corporate control of the media and how the corporate media would not touch this topic with a 10-foot pole, although they loved it with Clinton. And I think probably not so much because it was Clinton or that he was a Democrat, but because it had to do with sex. And, the corporate media is all over sex. But, I that's the math. And now we're close enough to the election that I think it's going to be very, very difficult. Although, you know, I tip my hat to Wexler. His website, Wexler, W-E-X-L-E-R, wantshearings.com, is great. He's got Luis Gutierrez, the Democrat from Illinois, and Tammy Baldwin from Wisconsin on board with this thing. And of course, Dennis Kucinich introduced the House resolution. Was it 333?
A question?
Yeah.
It seems to me that if the Democrats don't show a spine or grow a spine, okay, that the voters are going to say, well, you didn't get anything done while you were in power anyway.
I know. See, that's the other side of the political equation. And my guess is that right now the Democrats are looking worse than they would have looked if they had started right out by impeaching these guys.
Exactly.
But again, it comes back to the spin in the corporate media. I mean, the fact of the matter is that Nancy Pelosi in the House of Representatives has passed an enormous amount of really good legislation. It's been one of the most productive legislative sessions in probably in the last 50 years, you know, since the New Deal. Most of it has been blocked in the Senate by Republican filibusters and by Harry Reid's unwillingness to stand up to them, frankly.
Right, exactly.
I understand both sides of it. I understand why they've been afraid to, and I believe they should have. My personal opinion is that they should have, and that they should be holding hearings to find out what high crimes and misdemeanors have been committed. I mean, some have been admitted to. Bush has bragged about breaking the FISA law. That's 2 years in prison right there for every instance, and there's over 15,000 of them that he's owned up to. So I frankly, Carol Ann, and I thank you for the call. I just don't see it coming. I really don't. And I would love to see it coming down the road, but speak out. Speak out. If you think that this is important and this is going to work, but keep in mind, this is a razor's edge political calculus. There really is a razor's edge political calculus here. I am personally of the opinion that impeachment would work to the benefit of the Democratic Party. But there are a whole lot of people in the Democratic Party who believe that among the swing voters, who are absolutely necessary to carry, the old Reagan Democrats, among those people, it will completely turn them off. And don't forget how it will be spun in the corporate media. All the right-wing handmaidens who are out there, you know, everything that they're going to be saying. So, you know, it's a two-edged sword. It really is. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Chipmunks roasting on an open fire.
Chipmunks?
Hot sauce dripping from their toes. Yuletide squirrels, fresh filleted by the choir. They poked hot skewers through their nose.
Hey, wait a minute. This is the vegetarian show.
Some pepper and a garlic clove. help to make them seasoned right. Tiny rats with a crisp golden coat will really hit the spot tonight. And now when Santa sees his train, there'll be some homemade chipmunk jerky for his sleigh.
Oh man, I think I'm gonna barf.
And every hungry child is gonna spy.
Oh no! Okay, enough already. 35 minutes past the hour. And just a quick reminder, by the way, I'll be on C-SPAN's Book TV this weekend, Sunday, December 23rd at noon Eastern Time and 10 p.m. Eastern Time at C-SPAN Channel 2 about my new book, Cracking the Code, The Art and Science of Political Persuasion. And you can also see that on the web, I believe, over at cspan.org, c-span.org. Let me just recap, you know, my commentary. I'll give you my commentary on this. I was just talking to some of the folks in the chat room about this, and one of the folks in the chat room said, you know, this administration, forget impeachment. These guys should be up on war crimes trials in the Hague. I agree. And, in fact, Michael Ratner, Ellen Ratner's brother, who is the head of the Center for Constitutional Rights, ccr-ny.org is their website. They have a new website as well. I don't remember the URL for that. But in any case, Michael Ratner, on this program, you know, has talked about his efforts to do just that, you know, to get Rumsfeld and Cheney prosecuted in France and in Germany. And, you know, it's a tough thing. There's a lot of work to do. But here's the bottom line, and I'd like you to just seriously consider this for a moment. There are really two ways to do politics. And there are two ways to talk about politics. There's the cheap and easy way, and there's the hard and boring way. And the cheap and easy way generally is not all that effective, and the hard and boring way can be very effective. And the cheap and easy way is to play politics as if it was sports. It's my team versus your team. My team's better. Your team's terrible. Let's discuss campaign tactics. Oh, what did so-and-so say today about so-and-so? Give me a break. You don't hear that on this program because I think it's frankly a waste of time. It's like a magician, you know. He's waving his right hand around because he's doing with his left hand the real trick, and he wants you to watch the right hand. It's one of the reasons that the mainstream media is all about, well, what kind of dirty trick is fill in the blank, right? Hillary, Obama, Huckabee, Giuliani, Edwards, whatever. Well, up to today. That's cheap and easy politics. That's surface discourse. Running around going, yeah, impeach him, impeach him. It's cheap and easy. What we need to do is investigate them to find the crimes. This is where Wexler has taken it to the next step. And frankly, it's what John Conyers and Henry Waxman have been doing for some time now. And I believe that they're quite close to it. Is when you have the clear evidence, when you have the testimony, when you have the equivalent of John Dean speaking before the House Select Committee back in the 70s, '73, when you have that John Dean moment, when you finally have that testimony, when you finally have that smoking gun, then impeachment becomes obvious. Or criminal prosecution becomes obvious. So the hard and boring work is the investigation. Instead of calling our members of Congress and saying, damn it, why aren't you impeaching these guys? What we should be saying is, let me encourage you to investigate the crimes of this administration. I mean, this is the reason why the Attorney General and the earlier this week you had the Assistant Attorney General nominee are unwilling to talk about whether waterboarding is torture, because to say that it is ultimately is going to mean that several people, senior officials, probably at least the vice president, have committed war crimes, and thus are immediately impeachable. And frankly, I think this is the direction the Democrats are taking it, but I think that they're doing it in a smart and efficient way. The hard, boring politics, the stuff that I like to talk about on this program, and those of you who are regular listeners know, is join.
Join the Green Party. Join the Democratic Party. Join the Republican Party. Whatever your preference is, show up at the meetings. Participate. Help take over the damn thing. If you or I were to sit down and say, okay, we're going to try and take over General Electric. After all, they're a defense contractor. They make nuclear power plants. They make, you know, kind of cool appliances. And they own NBC. Let's try and take them over. We couldn't do it in a million years. We'd have to raise hundreds of billions of dollars. There's no way. But here's a machine that, frankly, has as much, and I believe far more influence and power than General Electric. It's called a political party, the Democratic Party. And they are sitting there saying, please, take us over. Infiltrate us from within. This is what conservatives did to the Republican Party in the 70s, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and they got what they wanted. Now, you know, tragically for America, the conservative vision for America is to take us back to the 19th century. They've been doing that, wiping out the middle class, making the rich richer. We're in the era of the robber barons. But, it, you know, nonetheless, that was their vision. And throw in a little theocracy and all as well. This is what we need to do. We need to be talking about investigating and you don't even need to use the word impeach. It's such a loaded word, particularly because of what happened to Bill Clinton. Use investigate, and the impeachment will follow. Once the crimes are clear, it will follow. And do the hard and boring stuff. Join and show up. Organize. Participate with your union. The UAW, not the UAW, the AFL-CIO has, you know, WorkingAmerica, I believe, .org is their website. They have this thing called Working America where anybody can join this subset of the AFL-CIO, whether you're a union member or not. Send small contributions to the politicians who are speaking out. Here you got Wexler. He's taking a courageous stand. You've got some good politicians who have taken very strong stands. Henry Waxman is absolutely giving these people hell. John Conyers is going after him all the time. Send him $25. It's not a big deal. Send him a small contribution. Tell your friends. Engage in political dialogue. Participate. Just jumping up and down and making bloviating noises and trying to play politics like it's a sport and we happen to be the Packers and they happen to be the Rams or something like that. That, you know, that is so shallow and so surface. And it ultimately will not produce change. And frankly, it'll turn off a lot of people. If you really want to see these guys impeached, then we need to be working to have the investigations completed, to have the subpoenas enforced. And that requires you and me contacting our members of Congress, not the ones, not, you know, Waxman and Conyers who are doing the investigations, or Pat Leahy who is you know, asking the Senate for citations against Gonzalez and whatnot for contempt of Congress. It means that you need to be, and I need to be, contacting our senators and saying, you should be with Leahy in enforcing these subpoenas. And as soon as you say impeachment, the person on the other end is going to go, oh, it's another impeachment call, and just hang it. But if you say, no, we want the investigation, it will get taken seriously, and it will lead to that. In the case of Nixon, when they first started going after him with Watergate, fewer than, not even all the Democrats on the House committee that was looking into Watergate were in favor of impeachment. By the time John Dean had testified and the evidence of the tapes had come out, when the secrets got spilled, you had even the Republicans on the House committee in favor of impeachment. And that's why Nixon resigned, because he saw the handwriting on the wall. That's what we need to do. Rob and Macon, and forgive the rant, but that, you know, I think it's important. Rob and Macon, Georgia. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to wish you a Merry Christmas to you and your family and all the people that work around you. You kind of stole my wind up underneath me. I was looking to be able to take and find out exactly how this credit crunch really started and when, because I'm looking at the sound machine in the near future here. But, you know, it's one of those things where Hillary gets the nomination. And if you can remember back about 15 years, there was this man that used to say there's going to be this giant sucking sound.
Yeah, Ross Perot, the little guy with the big ears that everybody made fun of and caricatured him and cartoonized him, and he was so right.
And at the same time, it's where, don't you think that the right-wing sound machine is going to be able to take and have all those sound bites to be able to take and use against Hillary? And a lot of Americans already are going through the problems that are going, you know, that were caused during the time that they signed all this into law, you know?
Yeah, and it's not just Hillary. I mean, they'll go against Hillary with whatever they've got. If Barack Obama is the nominee, I mean, they're already trotting out the, oh, is he a Muslim? You know, his middle name is Hussein. Oh, my God. Or, you know, is America ready for a black person? Or if it's John Edwards, it'll be, oh, he's got a haircut, or, you know, he's a good-looking guy. He must have had an affair with somebody. I mean, you know, they will do character assassination. That's not where we should be focusing our effort. We need to be focusing our effort on organizing, on grassroots activity, on getting into the ground, into the roots of the party, and taking it over and making it more progressive and electing progressive candidates. This is one of the cool things that they're doing over at the Daily Kos. They've been identifying specific progressive candidates and getting people together to toss, you know, 15, 20 bucks to these people and raising more money than the DLC has been able to raise. We're talking about primaries here. We're Democrats against Democrats in the primaries. Raising, in some cases, more money than the DLC has been tossing at them to get the progressive in there running against a Republican. Because progressives tend to win more easily than these, quote, so-called moderate Democrats. 45 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman, helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Francis in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Francis, what's on your mind today?
Yes, Mr. Hartman. Thanks for taking my call. Am I
sure?
Coming through okay?
Yeah, just fine. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great.
I want to make a short comment regarding impeachment, but after that comment, may I recommend a book title?
Sure.
Great. My comment is, I think you're exactly right. Let's not talk impeachment. But I want to take that a step further.
Well, there wasn't a sentence at the end of that, but when I said it, what I said is, instead of talking impeachment, let's talk investigations and
That's
crimes.
Right. Exactly.
That will inevitably lead to
right.
impeachment. Right. Talking, just going, oh, impeachment,
right.
impeachment. You know, I hear talk show hosts going off on this, and it's like,
right.
wait a minute, you know, this is not sports. This isn't, oh, my team's going to win. Yeah. No, it's this. We're talking the law here. We're talking doing it right here. And keep in mind, Nancy
right.
Pelosi has a 35-seat majority in the House of Representatives,
35.
Which is where impeachment has to begin. 47 Democrats are in Republican districts. You've got 47 blue dogs who are elected out of Republican districts.
Okay.
Democrats. Now, and they're not going to go along with impeachment. And in fact, they might lose their seats if they went along with this. I mean, you could see, this is the calculus that the Democrats are doing. If you don't have clear evidence of crimes that Joe Sixpack agrees with,
okay, that's
then,
me.
Then you could see the entire House go back to Republican.
I'm trying to have a conversation, but...
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm
okay.
ranting. Go ahead.
That's me, Joe Sixpack. Okay, so here we are. This is my suggestion. You still there?
I am. I'm listening.
Okay, good. That we take this a step further and not talk about investigation and prosecution, that we talk about resignation. And this is what I've been talking about for the past year, is that y'all ought to talk, y'all being talk show hosts, senators, congresspeople, and Joe Sixpack. So I've been doing my job. But I have not heard on either your show or anybody else's a specific call for the Vice President of the United States, Richard Cheney, to resign.
Okay, well, I will say right now, I think Richard Cheney should resign. I mean, there's no shortage of the crimes of this administration. I mean, you look at, they've lied us into a war. They caged over 1 million votes. You have summary execution and willful killing, the assassinations of people. You have violations of the Presidential Records Act with regard to the RNC
yep.
emails. You got this new book out about how they stole the election in New Hampshire, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. You've got warrantless wiretaps. You've got extraordinary renditions and torture. You got violations of habeas corpus and now the elimination of it. You got torture at home overseas. You know, you've got war crimes against in numerous places. You got Sarah Taylor, Karl Rove, all these violations of the Hatch Act. I mean, there's no shortage of crimes that you can identify. Sure, absolutely, they should resign.
Well, I don't think President Bush.
But they're not going to.
No, I think President. I think Vice President Cheney should resign.
Yeah.
And
well,
I
agree with you, Francis. But I'm telling you, it ain't going to happen. He is not going to go quietly into that good night. You know, it's not just going to happen. Jay in Detroit, Michigan, listening. But thank you for the call, Francis. Jay in Detroit, listening to WDTW. Hey, Jay.
Hi. Please tell me I'm wrong, but my theory is that Greenspan is not a fool and not a true believer, that the shock doctrine is, in fact, a valid doctrine. And this latest subprime fiasco is just a way to destroy democracy, because freedom is inconvenient for people, and they want total control, and they want power. And this is a good way to get it.
Yeah, I wrote an entire book about this called Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And the premise of that book is that conservatives looked at a strong, active, and vibrant middle class brought to us courtesy of the New Deal, where you had, you know, strong unionization, and you had cheap college, and you had a good, strong middle class. And they said, holy cow, in the 60s and 70s, holy cow, look at this. These people, these women are demanding rights. These African Americans are demanding rights. And gay people want to be part of society. You got the kids saying no, they won't go to a war. You got people out there in the streets protesting. We can't have that. We've got to do away with this strong middle class and turn it back into the working poor like we had in the 19th century. And so I agree with you. And Naomi Klein is absolutely right that shock doctrine is a piece of it. Although I would add that Alan Greenspan is a true believer in the libertarian and objectivist philosophy, in Ayn Randism. And so it's just, you know, it's like a hand and a glove. I mean, they fit together perfectly. George in Van Nuys, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, George.
Yeah, you were talking about the other day the fact that when the Supreme Court awarded Bush the presidency, the argument was that Scalia said that the plaintiff would be more harmed by what stretch of imagination on a recount, by what stretch of imagination is the plaintiff more harmed than the voter who didn't get their votes counted?
I agree with you absolutely, go back and read Bush v. Gore. It's absolutely mind-boggling to read the thing. I mean, to actually read the decision where 5-5 of the Supreme Court justices said that if the vote was allowed to be continued to be counted in the state of Florida, not, you know, it would be some legal technicality or it would be illegal or it was wrong or the state of Florida didn't have the authority. No. The reason that they stopped the vote was because they said continuing the vote would cause irreparable harm to plaintiff George W. Bush. It's totally bizarre. Aram in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Aram.
How you doing, Tom? Listen, I have to disagree with something. I listen to you all the time, and I've been an AAR fan for a very long time and listening all the time. But I'm getting my PhD in poli-sci. I've called up a lot of these Democrats. They're borderline jumpers, and I call them blue dogs because they're all bold blue dogs, like Brad Ellsworth and Mahoney and Lampson and all of them. And when I bring up investigations, the response I get is, well, that's not really that important. We didn't get elected for that. So even if you don't bring up impeachment, you bring up investigations. I hear the music, so I'll make this quick.
Yeah.
They're just going to blow you off completely unless you can grease a palm or hand him a
No,
check
it's
for it, fun,
it's
not going to get.
No, I understand. And maybe the first 10 calls you will get, well, yeah, thank you very much, and pat you on the head. The first 20 calls or the first 50 calls, but eventually there will be a critical mass. Don't give up. Don't stop calling. Don't stop faxing. Don't stop letting them know what you're thinking.
Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. The Tom Hartman Program. Now, speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone, Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the third hour of our program. Happy holidays to you. Happy winter solstice, too. A major Wiccan and pagan holiday today as well. Lots of holidays coming up. Greg Pallast is on the line with us. He has just returned yesterday from the jungles of Ecuador and a special interview with the president of that country. He's doing an investigation on behalf of the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC, and his website, of course, Greg Pallast, PALAST.com. New DVD about the assassination of Hugo Chavez, in fact, over there. Greg, hey, welcome to the program.
Glad to be with you. And what do you give a Wiccan for the solstice?
Maybe
it's not a joke. I don't know.
Maybe a Yule log. I'm not sure.
There you go.
So, yeah, I don't know. Louise's need to talk into the microphone there. Anyhow, Greg, I've got some audio that you sent me of what you experienced down in Ecuador, and let me just play a little bit of this, if I may. This first of all, it starts out a father talking about his son's experience.
I lost two sons. My three-year-old went swimming and began to vomit blood.
The Kofan say the damage to their health was caused by Chevron Texaco. Chevron says that's nonsense.
Let's go find out. This pit...
Actually, instead of playing an audio of you telling the story, why don't you just tell the story?
Okay, yeah. Well, actually, what you were hearing was the chief of the Kofan Indians. I went out to the to Ecuador's rainforest, the headwaters of the Amazon, and, you know, where you expect to see, like, you know, parrots and birds and natives communing with nature. Instead, you see natives communing with oil pits where there's an epidemic of child cancers.
Right.
Because a company named Texaco, a unit of Chevron Corporation, has crapped all over the rainforest there. They've left nearly 1,000 open pits of oil residue, just killer stuff. And the chief himself was telling me how his own son went swimming in one of these holes and came out that, because all the, you know, it's a jungle area. I mean, the, whatever oil pits are left there, it all drains right into the water supply. I showed this on the films. And his kid came out of the water vomiting blood and died. And there's a huge epidemic of childhood cancers there.
Right.
And you know, I should say that, you know, we also, you might be able to hear the lawyers themselves, they're very cute, from Chevron.
Here's one. You confronted one of Chevron's lawyers and pointed out that there's this epidemic of childhood cancer, and here was his response to you.
Did they show you a medical certificate?
No.
And it's the only case of cancer in the world? How many cases of children with cancer you have in the States, in Europe? In Quito, if there is somebody with cancer there, first they have to prove that it's caused by cruise or by petroleum industry. And second, they have to prove that it is our cruise, which is absolutely impossible.
This is the argument that the tobacco companies used to make. Hey, that cancer in your lungs doesn't have a little sign on it that says Lucky Strikes.
Well, also, he ends right after that by adding, there is absolutely no scientific connection between crude oil and cancers, which... I did speak to an environmental expert, Bobby Kennedy, who's an environmental law professor, and he said, yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot of cases of people drinking crude oil and then waiting 20 years to see if they got cancer, because they're usually dead in 20 seconds. What we do have, just like Emeritus's kid, you vomit up blood and you're dead. What we do have, though, is that the three components of the drilling, which are all over the jungle there, benzene, toluene or something, xylene, that stuff will get you. And we saw people there with all these pustules all over their body. It's really wonderful stuff. The problem we're running into, so we and you have to, if you go see the film, you'll actually see the guy chuckling about the childhood cancers. Well, you know, you got cancer everywhere, and you know, they're going to have to prove it's our oil. Ha ha. I mean, he's literally laughing about it. Okay. Knowing how difficult this case is. And what their other little chuckle is, if you have to understand, the Indians have filed a lawsuit against Chevron, saying they're not asking for money for themselves. They're saying clean up the crap you left in our backyard, and that's going to cost about $12 billion. And Chevron's saying, oh, we've moved all our assets out of the country. Gotcha. And but now they're in a bit of trouble, and of course they thought they had some other political protection. Chevron Corporation, let's not forget, is a company that named its largest tanker after their board member, they have a tank
Condoleezza
of
Rice.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's the only, as you know, Condoleezza is the only member of Bush's cabinet who can haul 130 million gallons of oil.
Yeah.
But that, so they basically figured they've got some pretty heavy-duty protection.
Greg, I work with I've done volunteer work for almost 30 years with an international charity, and we have a branch in Mindanao, Ecuador.
Uh-huh.
And I remember about 10 years ago, maybe 12 years ago, I'm racking my brain for his last name. His first name was Manuel, a local Ecuadorian activist who signed on with us, you know, who we hired essentially.
Right.
And I remember a conversation I had with him in Germany, actually, where he said that there was an oil pipeline going through, or
that
was proposed to go through, and he was going to start getting active and participating in fighting against the pipeline. And his question to us, you know, with the charity was, you know, because this wasn't the nature of our work. Our work was, you know, working with poverty rather than working against the oil pipeline.
Right.
Should I do this? Should I not do this? Are you guys going to fire me if I do this? And our response to him was, you know, what you do on your own time is what you do on your own time, and we're not opposed to political activism. We just can't endorse it. Within 6 months, he was dead. He went back to Ecuador. He got involved in the movement to try and stop the pipeline, and middle of the night, somebody came into his house and shot him in the head. That's
well,
all I know about it. He's,
yeah,
we've never found out who killed him.
Well,
is that kind of thing still going on there?
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. I wasn't exactly going to cover this story in the dark. I had to go out to the village in a canoe in the rain. And I have to say that the courts of Ecuador hired an engineering expert to look at the oil pits and see whether that these were Chevron's pits by, you know, sampling them and seeing if they're going to the water supply. He just wrote a letter to the judge just a couple weeks ago saying, I'm being followed. My office has been broken into. My files have been stolen. I'm afraid for my wife. I'm, you know, her safety. I'm afraid for the safety of my coworkers, and I'm not sure that I'm going to get out of this inspection alive. And that's
I don't want to, by the way, imply in any way that any particular company had to do with Manuel's death. I mean, because there's also a huge political conflation. The administration at that time, and it's changed now, but the administration in Ecuador 10, 12 years ago was taking the position that the anti-pipeline activists were communists and terrorists.
And, of course, it was, as you know, it's a military dictatorship. As the head of one U.S. corporation, Entergy, said, we like that. We like that. It's benevolent dictatorship. Good for business. It's not very benevolent when they knock off your activists.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is right now, and that's been the big change there, they've got a guy who just was elected president who is modeling his policies after Franklin Roosevelt.
Right, and who himself is aboriginal.
He's from mixed race, and he's a poor kid. In fact, I just met with him the day before yesterday. I spoke with the president, which he rarely does, and it's the only English language interview he's ever given. And even though he used to teach at the University of Illinois, of all things, but he has said, and he brought up a point which he's never brought up in Spanish interviews because it's very sensitive. His father was in prison in the U.S. for 4 years because he was caught. He was a mule caught carrying a little bit of cocaine to get into the United States. It's the only way he could survive. This kid came off the streets, somehow through smarts, got a PhD and is now president.
Yeah.
And what he's trying to explain is, look, they told us the oil companies would come in and solve the poverty. They told us the International Monetary Fund would come in and solve the poverty. They told us if we had a U.S. military base here, we would be safe. Instead, we're terrorized, we're impoverished, and we don't have any gasoline even in our cars. Like, all we have oil all over our jungle, but we couldn't even afford it. So he has now taken the position. This is not exactly winning fans. He said that Condoleezza's oil company has got to clean up the forest. He said, get the military base off our soil. Unless you put a military, Ecuador military base in Miami.
Yeah.
That's a deal for you.
That's going to be quite a challenge. Well, you can read all about it over at gregpalast.com. I strongly encourage you to check it out. Greg, thanks so much for being with us and sharing this story. Good talking with you. Always, always great having you on. 16 minutes past the hour.
Tom Hartman. uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Osama got run over by a reindeer right outside his cave on Christmas Eve. Some folks say there's no such thing as Santa, but now even the Taliban believe. Osama thought we'd never find him, but even little children know Santa knows who's been real naughty in those hard Afghani mountains capped with snow. Al-Qaeda found him Christmas morning, face down on that mountain pass. There were hoof marks on his turban and a broken reindeer antler up his
back.
Osama got run over by a reindeer.
Oh, yes. In our dreams, I guess. 21 minutes past the hour. Just a quick reminder, Sunday, December 23rd, at noon Eastern Time, and 10 p.m. Eastern Time, it'll be replayed. I'll be on Book TV on C-SPAN. I think it's C-SPAN 2, I'm pretty sure, is the channel for that. So I'll be, it's a recording that was made about a month ago when I did a talk at the Strand, the bookstore in New York City. Great bookstore, by the way. In New York City, and Richard Belzer introduced me, and it was, and I'm hoping his introduction shows up on it as well, because that was very, very nice, and he did a great job, and later I got together with him and his wife, great people, and anyhow, that'll be on C-SPAN Sunday, the 23rd, noon, and at 10 p.m. Eastern time, and you know, however that calibrates to you, whatever time zone you may be in. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, Chuck in San Jose, California. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hi. It's funny. Every time when you get on the air, the volume goes down. I'm just curious. I got two points. Since 2002, my wife and I have been voting absentee.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's best that we encourage everybody to go to the non-machine type of voting.
Here's the problem with that, Chuck, and that is that absentee votes very often don't get counted. I mean, there were over 100,000 absentee votes in and provisional ballots. They got thrown into the same pool in Ohio after the election that never to this day haven't been opened.
That's I guess I don't know if it's better or not, but what else, you know, the machine.
I think what we need to do is we need to get so active in the political parties and in the political lifeblood of this country. We need to insert ourselves into the bloodstream of this country politically, mm-hmm. to be able to say and actually have it be heard that, you know, if you want to privatize the bathrooms or the food stand at Yellowstone or the snowmobile concession, you know, we don't think that's a great idea, but we're not gonna fight you on that. But when you want to privatize our vote, that's the ultimate. I mean, that's the ultimate crime against democracy,
I noticed that, you know, I've been listening to you, and then Bernie mentioned it this morning about public funding of elections.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that if the money that we give, like on our 1040, was some kind of like a not necessarily a nonprofit, but some kind of tax deductible contribution, would that help encourage more active participation in the contribution sector, do you think?
I don't understand what you mean. I mean, right now, if you make political contributions, they're tax deductible.
Are they?
Maybe they're not.
Because on the 1040 form for the IRS, you know, it says, do you want to donate, blah, 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 you know, and yes or no.
You talking about the $5 to the presidential fund?
Well, if
or are you talking about, you know, giving $100 to Kucinich or Edwards or Hillary or, you know, Clinton or whatever?
Well, if you want to, you know, like if you want to give it to a particular sector, like your voting precinct or something, mm-hmm. for your official to run, would you be able to take that? Would you be able to deduct that off like a nonprofit type thing?
Yeah.
You know,
I honestly don't know, and I should. And I'll look into that.
You know, that might be encourage more people, because I know I don't do it because I think, oh, you know, it's all corrupt anyway. But if we do go to public financing, it might be the best way to get away from this corporate America stealing our livelihood.
Well, the amazing thing about public financing of elections is how cheap it is.
You know, I mean, we've got 120 million taxpayers, and if we all put in $10, that's $1.2 billion.
And that would
that's enough to pay for one hell of an election.
mean, yeah, that's true.
And that's every year $1.2 billion if we each put in $10.
And then it'd be a trust fund to build up for the every 2 years. Or
oh,
three
it would
years.
Be incredible. It would be absolutely incredible. And then if you added on top of that a requirement that anybody who uses the public airwaves has to give even a small percentage, you know, 10% of their, 10%, I don't, maybe even 10% is too much, 1% of their commercial airtime during a 3 month period leading up to the elections to public debate of the issues or to political advertising or something.
Well, if they go with that consolidation of the FCC, we may not even be able to see that.
Yeah, I know. It's grim. Chuck, thanks a lot for the call, and I will find out about the tax deductibility and the nuance of that of political contributions. I know that there are some organizations that you can give money to that I'm not even sure of that actually. I'm not a tax lawyer and frankly I'm not in the rarefied income level where you learn about all those things. I do the simple one. John in Rollinsville, Colorado. Hey, John, listening on 780 AM?
760.
Oh, hey, John, I'm sorry. We just hit the break. I didn't hear it coming. Let me
May
put you
I
on
hold?
Hold. I'll put you on hold. We'll pick you up on the other side of the break here. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. TomHartman.com if you want to drop into our live chat room. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on any topic you'd like to discuss. Stick around.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Shoe one horse, open sleigh, would come carry me away, but I've been waiting here all day. I'm not being reverent, but I was hoping for a miracle to hold me, wash me, save me from a righteous doubt as I watch helpless and everybody sings if it's Hanukkah.
34 minutes.
Solstice, harvest, or December 25th. Peace on earth to everyone.
Peace on earth, everyone. Welcome back, listener-supported radio. Brought to you by Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. SacredGroundsCoffee.com, Small Dog Electronics, SmallDog.com, The Organic Wine Company, EcoWine.com, SEIU 1199, and the sponsors you hear on your local stations. Please let them know you're listening, and let the stations know that you're listening if you like hearing the show. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and we were talking just a moment ago. Did he drop off the board? Apparently he did. I'm sorry. Apparently we have lost the caller that we had there. So let's go to Denise in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Denise, what's up?
Hi. I have a very soft Christmas tree story for you. Years ago, I lived next door to this single young man. He was director of the Detroit Balalaika Orchestra. And every year he lit a tree in his backyard that was out of sight of everyone. It was just so far back in his yard that it couldn't be seen from the street, and it was brilliantly lit throughout the Christmas season, and I was so struck by that it was a tree that he had lit only for his God to see.
Isn't that sweet? And for himself, I would say, you know, for
and for himself too. Yeah, but he could barely see it from the back of his house.
Yeah, that's sweet, Denise. Thanks for sharing that story with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
And happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, the same to you. Thank you.
Thank you. And by the way, I wanted to follow up on my conversation with Greg Palast about the oil companies. Aaron Selbig, who's the program director at KUDO, Kudo. 11 or 1080 a.m. up in Anchorage, Alaska, one of the affiliates that carries this show, shared with me, this is such a hoot, speaking of oil companies, there is a pitch being made, and they're actually buying advertising on his station as well, for an oil company to put a gas pipeline through Alaska. And this is the actual commercial.
ConocoPhillips has submitted a proposal to the state of Alaska to develop a project that will bring Alaska North Slope natural gas to market. We believe the proposal we have put forward addresses the state's objectives and creates a path to get all parties working together towards making this gas pipeline a reality. We invite you to review our proposal. Visit us at ansnaturalgaspipeline.com. ConocoPhillips.
Now, isn't that sweet? I mean, you know, it's a nice ad, and they thought that that was kind of boring, and so they ran a contest for the best spoof ad. And these are spoof ads. This was the runner-up from Lisa.
You better watch out. You better not cry. We're ConocoPhillips, and we're telling you why. Our gas line plan is the plan for you. We see you needing LNG. We know you want it bad. You'll give us the tax breaks we want just so it can be had. If you want your pipeline, you'll have to kiss our ass. We bend over, you pucker, and then you'll get your gas. So you better watch out, because we've bribed your guy. He's corrupt, and you know why, because our gas line plan is the one for you.
With sound effects from the radio station and the winner of the contest.
Hello, my name's Jim Bowles. I run the biggest oil company in the world, and I'm a big pumper. I carry a big hat and a big jar of Vaseline for all my Alaska friends, and especially my favorite politicians. Come see us.
Amazing. So, yeah, they got a sense of humor there in Alaska. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And let's see here. Tim in South Bend, Indiana. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. God bless you, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays to
you. Thank you, and all the same back at you.
I can't thank you enough. You've done so much to inspire me, and I have called my representatives. As a matter of fact, I want to tell you that Senator Lugar had written me a letter and said that public funding of voting was unconstitutional. And I'd like to know, what can we do to change that?
Well, there actually was a Supreme Court ruling, and I think that it was probably Buckley versus Vallejo that addressed this. I'd have to go back and look, but I'm 95% certain that Buckley versus Vallejo in 76 specifically, as a subset of the ruling, addressed campaign financing. And they didn't say it was unconstitutional. What they said was that it had to be voluntary, that you couldn't force people to accept public funds. So the way that most public funding programs get around this is you, and in fact, we were trying to get Eric Stan on the program here a couple days ago from Portland to talk about it, and I don't know, his schedule caught up with him or something, because he ran here in Portland using public funds. If you get 1,000 people to give you $5 and sign a petition, the city gives you $100,000. And the woman running against him worked for a PR firm that had among their clients Enron, or the Enron division, the local power company. And she got, you know, $125,000 in private contributions. And so the state then gave Eric another $25,000. And it continued like that. And what was so cool about it was not just that, or the city rather, not just that we the taxpayers, we the people who own the election, we were able to always make sure that our candidates, that is those, whether we agree with them or not, our candidates, that is those who are taking public financing, always had an amount of money equal to that of the ones who were privately funded. But also, because this was all done out in the open, every time the person who was privately funded got an extra $25,000 from the oil company or whatever, or the utility, that was in the newspaper and actually worked against them in a way. So there are ways around it, and I would advise you to tell Senator Lugar that you know, it works well in Portland, Oregon. It works well in Arizona. It works well in Maine. It's working well in communities all over the United States.
I agree. By the way, you made my Christmas letter as well. I'm promoting The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight as well as Screwed.
Well, thank you.
And I'm a huge fan of Neil Donald Walsh as well, and I think really it's true that we have to start with spirituality and try to figure out, how do we change the mindset in this country?
Yeah, we have to wake up ourselves and others. Thank you, Tim. Thank you very much for your kind words. It's much appreciated. Yeah, Neil and his Conversations with God books, his third book. I had no idea this was coming. I didn't know Neil at the time. And the book comes out, and you know, Neil's having this conversation with God, and Neil says, "What do I do about the problems of the world?" This was 12 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. And God says, "Read The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight by Tom Hartman." I saw this in this book, Conversations with God. So our publisher, Random House, at the time, issued a news release saying, God endorses book for second time in history. In the New Testament, God endorsed the Old Testament, and now in Conversations with God with Neil Donald Walsh, God has endorsed The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight by Tom Hartman. It was a funny moment. Forgive me for indulging in what might sound like bragging. It was just such a hoot. It was like one of the high points of my life. David in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on AM 950. Hey, David.
Yeah, hey, Tom. Great to talk to you. I missed you last week when you were at the U of M here. But anyways, I just read in the paper today that they are actually going to close the Minnesota Science Museum here during the Republican convention next year and next fall. And I think it's ironic with Bush vetoing the stem cell research. They're denying the global warming and all the, you know, attacks on science that we've had, that they would actually step foot into the science museum here.
Are they closing the science museum just during the GOP convention? I'll be there, by the way, in Minnesota for the GOP convention. I'm doing the show live from there. They're just closing it during the convention. What, are they afraid that the Republicans might wander in accidentally and think that it's a porn shop, but it's not, or you know, Larry Craig, you know, looking for the wrong bathroom, and instead they discover that there's a display on evolution?
Yeah, maybe they'll have to Larry Craig the Science Museum bathroom there as well.
there you go. David, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to us there in Minneapolis, yeah. Jim in California. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind today?
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Jim, you're on the air.
I wondered how much investigation has been going on into advertising agencies, specifically with the military advertising and making commercials for the young people that make it look like you're going to a video game or something.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I don't know, and I don't know if there's anybody who's tracking that, but, you know, there's really two dimensions to that. One is, you know, kind of the your tax dollars at work piece of it. The other is, what impact does it have on a news channel, let's say, like CNN, for example, or MSNBC, when one of their larger advertisers is the military? How does that affect their willingness to cover the military? So, you know, it's a good one. Kelly in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Kelly, we got about 3/4 of a minute here before we got to take a break. What's up?
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hi, my name's Kelly, and I'm just curious as to what the Constitution really means. Because the way it's written, Congress cannot alter how senators are chosen. However, from my understanding, in 1916, 1918, something like that, Woodrow Wilson pushed through legislation that made it so that the people had the vote.
It wasn't legislation. It was an actual amendment to the Constitution.
Okay. And if it was an amendment...
And that provision, the ability to amend the Constitution is provided for in the Constitution.
I understand that. However, also in the Constitution, it says that the Senate has no right to change or alter the places of choosing senators, or that Congress cannot make or alter the place of choosing senators.
Right. And then later on it says, and the things like that in the Constitution can be modified if... You know, what is it, 2/3 each of the House and Senate vote on it and 3/4 of the states. And that's what happened. The Constitution did get amended. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
See trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
That was my dad's favorite song. We played it at his funeral. Thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, Marcus Hillman, and Sean Kensing at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives for our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. Ellen Ratner on the line with us. Ellen Renner of Talk Radio News, talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen, what's up?
Oh, this morning there was a judge in Washington, D.C., Judge Kennedy.
He was asked by the Yemeni prisoners who are in Guantanamo to get the CIA to explain the destruction of the videotapes. The government, that is the U.S. government, argued that they did not need to have a second investigation or second explanation going on, since Justice Department's Mukasey is investigating. Rather than say that the CIA should explain the tapes, it looks as if the Judge Kennedy has taken it under advisement.
Which means that he hasn't
yet decided. Not doing anything right now.
Right, but it may end up that he'll say that there needs to be a private investigation, an independent prosecutor, a special prosecutor.
He did not flat out say no.
Well, that's good. I guess that's a good sign so far.
So far, so good on that front. President Bush left today, and he is going to Camp David for a week, and then I guess he'll go to Texas for the ranch. There has also been some interesting news about the defense, about the Iraq budget. And as you know, there was $70 billion in that budget, and now it looks like the president may be asking for as much as $40 billion more. Secretary Gates.
You mean for Iraq and Afghanistan?
That's right.
Well.
Secretary Gates is also saying, and by my calculation, 70 and 40, you're dealing with more than $2 billion a week.
Yeah.
And this is all
off budget, by the way, and this is not being paid for by tax increases or fees. This is all being put on the national credit card, which we're paying interest on, and which will be paid back by our children and grandchildren.
And that doesn't go into the $500, you know, billion dollars or whatever that's in defense anyway.
Right, yeah.
So there you have, I mean, the cost of the Iraq war must be beyond what we can possibly imagine.
Well, an awful lot of it has been privatized, and that's very expensive. I mean, if you're going to pay a private contractor $150,000 a year, and you're going to pay the company, you know, another $100,000 a year on top of that for support services for him, as opposed to, you know, just a regular GI, it costs a fortune to run a war.
When I was in Camp Fallujah, there was a firefighter. He'd been off the base twice in 6 months, and he was being paid $90,000 a year, essentially to sit there all day.
Wow.
As a contractor.
Our tax dollars at work. And I guarantee you that, well, I can't guarantee you, but I would bet that whatever the contracting company was that he was working for had been greasing the palms of a whole bunch of Republicans. Why can't we call campaign contributions bribes and get some laws passed?
I don't know, but we should. Yeah. It's a legalized bribery.
It really is.
The other interesting thing about that, about today, is that today Condoleezza Rice did a little press conference, and she really took after Huckabee on his comment about Bush's bunker mentality. She said that the idea that this is a go-it-alone policy is ludicrous. She said 50 countries came to Annapolis. She talked about relations in terms of Europe have never been better in their
personal. Never?
Or never in the reason at in the
morning. Not in the last 6 months.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So that is really getting some talk. I mean, there's not much else going on in Washington. Also, Washington Post did a little interesting article. There were 11,000 earmarks between defense and the omnibus appropriations bill.
Hmm. Any breakout of what percentage of those came from Democrats versus Republicans?
I think there's more Democrats simply because they're in power. Apparently, though, the Bridge to Nowhere folks, according to the Washington Post, Ted Stevens and Don Young from Alaska, got another $20 million for a craft that is essentially a ferry boat. They're calling it the Ferry to Nowhere.
Yeah, interesting. Now, Condoleezza Rice, apparently in her press conference, she also pushed back against former Arkansas governor, the Right Reverend Mike Huckabee.
Right, that's just what I was talking about in terms of Bush's bunker mentality.
Oh, that was specific. Okay. Great.
Yeah. That's where she was going right after him. She was asked about it, and then she just went right back, and she said, well, I'm not going to comment, and then she all of a sudden started commenting, talking about this is ludicrous, and she went on, I'd say, you know, a good couple paragraphs on them.
Yeah, and apparently she has joined the war on Christmas as well by saying happy holidays to people.
So. You got it. One other interesting thing, the Polish prime minister today said that U.S. missile defense, if they wanted to have some kind of actual base or some kind of missile in Poland, they would have to show how it would enhance Poland's security. I guess that's our great cross-pond relations there.
Hmm. You mean Poland might be backing away from having the bases? I mean, this is making Putin crazy. He's quite literally threatening us.
That is their backing. That's their out. That's the way they're putting it.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting because I think that would be such a good thing if they were able to say no, because putting missiles in his backyard, it's like the Soviet Union putting missiles in Cuba. I mean, from Putin's point of view. And
other interesting thing, since I'm not going to be with you for the next week, is that Fair and Roger Hitchcock are doing a radio row in Iowa based on immigration. They're trying to whoop it up right before.
Oh, geez. Well, what a surprise. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks so much, Ellen. Happy holidays. Have a great week.
Thank you so much. You too.
Thank you. Coming up next week in the Tom Hartman program, happy holidays. Alex Frankel will be here on Punching In. Tim Carney and I are going to debate energy mandates. Marjorie Cohn on the latest legal scandals of the Bush administration. That and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Happy holidays. Have a great weekend.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit TomHartmanRadio.com.